Thank you for purchasing an FRPA educational recording. Please refer to the materials that were included in the confirmation email that you received after you purchased this recording. Those materials include the presentation, which you will want to follow along with, and any information regarding CEU credit.
I'm Joe Abel. I have been around for years and years and years and years and years and years. So we thought we'd talk today a little bit about building an all-star bench. So I've been around a while, like I said, about 32 years in the profession. I started out in Charleston, West Virginia. I know, quite a metropolis. Anybody been to West Virginia? Anybody probably not admitted if they were? Come on now. So if I say some words that you don't recognize, it's probably because I learned them in West Virginia. Even though I haven't been back for, well, I go back every year, but I moved down in South Florida in 89, so what's this, 19? So like 30 years? So I've been here for 30 years. I'm almost a native Floridian. But today we're going to talk about, oh, by the way, the deputy county manager thing just happened. Nobody's any more surprised than me. I figure I've only got about 3 years left, and how can you screw a job up in 3 years? And then I remembered, hold my beer, because I could probably do it. I got to a point where it was like, okay, you've done a lot of hopefully good things in parks and recreation. You've built a pretty good bench. And there's an opportunity that I can be on to the county manager's office and make a little bit bigger difference, not just in support of the leisure services department, but for the county as a whole. So that's really the impetus behind doing this. I had an opportunity to do it when I was in Coral Gables to be the assistant city manager, and it's like, no, I wasn't ready at the time. I wanted to had a lot more to do in parks and recreation, so eventually made the move to Seminole County. And I've been there for a little over 12 years now, and I think we're doing some pretty good stuff if you're familiar with Seminole County. So I used to start my classes with a slide that said philosophies and disclaimers. And then I found this one. Matter of fact, they wanted to mic me for the sessions. And I said, thanks, but no. I'm never really sure what's going to come out of my mouth. I have a pretty good idea when it starts, but by the time it exits, sometimes it's just not the exact same. The message usually gets there. So I'm learning. The filter is getting better, especially now. Although I have a couple commissioners that we talk all the time, we have an understanding that there is no filter either way, so it works out pretty well. But I just want you to know I warned you, so there's your warning. And a little bit about me, probably in a nutshell, for those who hang around me a lot, this is probably what you get. Now, from here on out, it's kind of a discussion, because I counted the slides, and I'm like four slides in, and there's only like eight slides total. And you think I'm kidding you? So what I really want to do today, especially with this, is to talk about it from both sides. If you're a young guy or girl and just coming into the profession, how do I get up the ladder? The first words I'm going to tell you is don't try to go too fast. Take your time. I'm going to try to give you some tidbits of Joe Abel wisdom. Do with it as you will. What I always try to tell people, I always try to tell my staff, when you come to conferences, don't try to remember everything, but try to remember one or two things that really stand out in each of the sessions that you go to, and that'll be the biggest benefit, because if you just think about it, if you're here for 3 or 4 days, and you go to a dozen classes, and you take away two things from each of those classes, you have 24 things to focus on for the next year. That's a pretty incredible amount of information to take away and then try to do something with it. So I'm only asking you to try to get one or two tidbits today from me for this class. and I got a couple other classes, and I'm going to plug those as we go through the day because that's just how shameless I am. Of course, if you don't like this class, then probably I won't see you the rest of the week, but that's okay too. I'll be the only one that suffers. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to inspire you a little bit today, and we're going to talk about what are managers looking for from how you dress to how you present yourself. And then we're going to discuss some pre and post preparation of the interview process. There's an old saying, you only get one chance to make a great first impression. I 100% believe that. I've had people who probably were great people who have come in to do an interview with me that dressed inappropriately. They were done. I quit listening. My ears shut down. If you don't dress appropriately, that's a X for you out of the gate with me. Well, that's not with everybody, but that's with me. So lesson number one, dress for success. You don't have to wear a tuxedo, maybe not even a tie, maybe not even a jacket. I don't expect a suit from a guy or a girl who's coming in for a maintenance one worker position. But man, I get almost giddy when they do. Because it means that it's important to them. And if it's important to them, then it's important to me to recognize that. And I will usually make a comment that, thank you for dressing to wear a tie or a jacket. We'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll talk about how to actively develop knowledge and experience. We'll talk about mentoring and leadership assistance. Then we'll talk a little bit about how do you move up inside the organization if the first attempt fails. And that's pretty common. There's a lot of people that don't automatically just move up, doesn't matter how good you are. And I was one of those people. My first job, I almost walked away. My second job, I almost walked away from the profession. Because I personally didn't think I was moving as quickly as I should or as quickly as I wanted to. And that would have been a big mistake. Matter of fact, one of the people who kind of mentored me along helped me stay in the profession and make the right decision, and it significantly paid off in about 6 months after I had almost made the decision to walk away. So we'll talk a little bit about some of that stuff. Like I said, I only have a few slides, So what are managers looking for from how you dress? What are you guys looking for from folks that come in, whether it's entry-level position or a higher-level position? What are you looking for?
Iron. Like, don't be wrinkly.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the part where you guys talk, and then we start a discussion off of that topic, because I'm telling you, I only have a few slides, and if you don't talk,
To recognize, like, dressing for the situation that you want to do that day. It's above what their desk job is, or if they want to meet someone.
Yeah, does everybody hear that? So speak up so everybody can hear. So dress for the position that you're going for. Dress appropriately to the position you're going. And if you're coming from someplace else, I'm the type of guy that maybe it's a little superficial, I don't know, but I'm impressed that if I've got a maintenance guy who I know works for me and has an interview with me, and he changes clothes from his work, his shop stuff for the interview, that impresses me. It's not necessary for me because if he's on my team and I know he's on my team and he's coming in and out of the field, I'm okay with that. I accept that. But man, does it impress me when somebody comes in and makes that effort. And you're going to hear a common theme between this session and if you come to my other sessions, because some of them are similar, because we're going to talk about some of the same things. And really, the only reason I came to do sessions this year at conference was because I really want to share some of the things that I think about when I'm hiring, some of the things I think about when I'm leading, some of the things I think about when I'm trying to mentor or influence. And the three sessions today, I think there are two of the three and one tomorrow, really focus on kind of getting inside my head. I think I've had a pretty good career. I think if I was going to define success for Joe Abel, I would say I've done pretty well. I've done much better than I thought I would 30 years ago. And the target moved. As I moved, the target moved. And that's really about creating your own success. But some of the things that we want to talk about is how do you get there? So what else about dress? What else are you looking for from me? From
attention to detail.
Yes. And it can go both ways. I'm going to give you an experience here. So I love it when a guy comes in with a tie. That's just the way it is. I love it when a woman comes in a dress suit or a nice dress or something that maybe is really over the position expectation, but I really like when they go all out. So I just hired a new executive assistant. In the interviews, one of the guys that came in, he was outside, he didn't know how to tie his tie. He wrote a tie, he didn't know how to tie it. Luckily, somebody outside the interview room helped him tie his tie. So they tied it, he put it around his neck, he runs into the restroom. He tightens the tie up. He has a button down collar. He tightens, he buttons this button. He puts somehow, I'm not even sure how he got it done. He had the tie underneath the shirt collar back here, but over the buttons here, and then he had the tie. Now, he was probably in his early 20s, going for a job that he probably wasn't quite technically ready for. And you kind of had to chuckle a little bit when you saw it because it was just a little bit funny. But man, did he slay the interview. He slayed the interview. All the right questions, or all the right answers to the questions. He didn't ultimately get the job, not because of the tie, but because the tie was an indication that he wasn't at that location yet. He wasn't at that place in his professional development. Now, you may sound that sounds a little superficial, but think about it. And I'm going to say this, and I mean it as a joke, but I mean it kind of, if he doesn't know how to tie a tie, how does he represent the county manager's office given the opportunity that he needs to represent the county manager's office?
Show him how to tie a tie.
And we did. We fixed the tie. And that wasn't the thing that didn't get him the job. The thing that didn't get him the job was that he didn't have quite the experience that he needed to be. Sometimes I consider positions about getting thrown into the lion's den. Sometimes people just aren't ready. There are outside circumstances. I'm going to give you an example. He's sitting here in the room, Michael Wittersing. He just became the division manager for Parks Recreation for Seminole County. He applied 4 years ago for the position. He was ready for the position. He interviewed extremely well. We had a lot of politics going on right at that time. In fact, I wasn't even sure I was going to stay in the position because of the politics. I knew if I moved him at that time, he would get a target on his back. And he was too valuable to me and the organization to put that target on his back. It cost him a promotion that he deserved. But today, he's the division manager, and I guarantee he will go on to be extremely successful in that position because it's the right time, the right opportunity. And that's the job of you as the person who's hiring to know that. If you're going to build an all-star team, you have to know when to put the right people in the right place. Now, I go way back, because I'm a basketball guy, I go way back to, I believe it was in 78, 79, 80, maybe, Philadelphia 76ers basketball team. They had compiled the best players arguably at the time in the NBA on the same team. There was no way they were not going to win a world championship. Guess what? They didn't win. And the single reason they didn't win was because they had the talent, they didn't have the team. They didn't have the talent, or they had the talent, they didn't have the team. So I've done a lot of coaching. And I've always said that as a manager, you're the coach of the team. Because I don't manage leisure services anymore. I don't manage parks and recreation. We have good people that we have scouted, that we have mentored, that we have hired into those positions, and they do those positions. They're there. They own them. When we hire supervisors, it's important that we put the right supervisor in the right place for the right reasons. I have one, two, three, four people that are sitting in this room that are in or were in a supervisory capacity in our organization since I was in Seminole County. And you say, why would they come to this class? And I could probably tell you individually why each of them are here, but that's for them to know. But I can tell you, all of them may not be happy where they are at this very moment because they have ambition to be in another level or in another location. It's my job building an all-star team to make sure that we've got the right people at the right place to carry out what needs to be carried out at that given location or under those given circumstances. And that's a decision that I have to make. Not always popular, but that's a decision I have to make. So, what are managers looking for? I digress, which is why I have to give out like three slides because I can't stay on track. What are managers looking for when you present yourself? How you present yourself? So, as a manager, what are you looking for?
Confidence.
I love that.
Ability
to do the job. I like confidence, and I like the ability to do the job. And there's a thin line. And trust me, I know because I've been called a lot of things. Egotistical being one of those. I have been called egotistical for a large portion of my career. And it used to bother me a lot. If you knew my background, I'm not that guy. But what I am is confident. I am extremely confident that when I make a decision, I've made the best decision based on the information that I had at that time. So as a manager, when you're making a decision on who to hire, make sure it's the right decision for now. Make sure that you're hiring the right person that fills the spot on your roster, on your team, that makes your team better. Just because the individual is outstanding, is stellar, is an overachiever, is probably the best candidate for the position, if they're not the right fit for your team, they're not the right fit for your team. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, I think, in some follow-up slides. So pre- and post-preparation and follow-up to interviews. What do you look for and what do you do? So as an interviewer, what do you look for? As an interviewee, what's important? What should you be doing?
My research.
Research, I love that word. And when you research, what are you looking at?
Looking at the site. What does the job entail? Where is it at? Trying to gather information on the staff. Who your team will be, possibly could be. Researching every aspect of it.
And anybody else do that? The single most important thing you can do, once you get to an upper level management position, if you're not doing that, you're not preparing yourself for the interview. Now, I'll say statements like that during this, and you may agree or disagree, and that's okay. And what I do is I teach or preach, depending on which way I'm going, or whichever side I'm on. It's really from my experience. I talk from my experience, and I can tell you that the jobs that I've moved into easily is because of the amount of energy and research that I put into it. I can tell you that I sat in Coral Gables with the city manager there when I interviewed with him, and he made a comment that I probably knew as much about his department as he did. And that impressed the hell out of me, to the point that I obviously got the job at the end of the day. But I had visited there. I knew their staff inside and out. Luckily, I had been involved with some of them through the professional association. But I knew where their strengths were. I knew where their weaknesses were. I could have done a SWOT analysis on them in the interview, and the city manager knew it. That's pre-preparation, and you should always do that. If you're not doing that, you're cheating yourself, and to some degree, you're cheating the person that you're applying for. What else?
Follow up with the email or phone call, just thinking of the time to make some application or the interview or whatever the case may be.
How many people do that? How many people don't do that? I would strongly recommend that you do that. And I would say go as far as, if you don't get the position, I think it's fair game to call and ask why. You might not just do it that way, but I think it's fair. And here's what happens. I've had it happen a couple of times, and I've kept those people on my radar because it was that impressive to me. If they didn't get the job, if they would call me and sit down with me, or call me and say, listen, I appreciate I didn't get the job. I'm hoping that the person you selected does well, and I wish them success. Are there one or two things that I could have done differently that would have helped my interview? Is there one or two things that I could have done differently? And unfortunately, with me, sometimes I'm a little blunt. I try not to be too blunt, but if they're not prepared for the interview, I will tell them that you weren't prepared for the interview. You need to do better research. You need to know about the organization a little bit more, depending on the level and what the expectation was coming into the interview. If you come in for a division manager in our organization, you don't know, you haven't done your homework, we're going to know pretty quick, because we're going to ask you questions somewhere in line with what's going on in our organization. And if you can't answer, I'm not talking about we dig down into detail or into the weeds, but if you don't know some of the answers to questions we're asking, you're probably not going to be a great candidate. Yes?
I just have a question, because when you go back and they say, you ask the appropriate questions, what do you think is the appropriate question as to why or why not? And they say, oh, it just wasn't a good fit. Is that supposed to be like because your personality, or because, what is that, how do you interpret that?
Oh, man, that's a $64,000 question. I'm glad you asked it. The higher you get, the more you're going to hear that. And it goes back to the team. It goes back to the right fit. Because again, as a coach, I don't need too many, as a basketball coach, I don't need too many point guards on the team. What I need is a good, strong point guard and a backup. I need a good forward and a backup. I need a good center and a backup. I need good guards and backups. But what I don't need are five centers to take the floor. I'll lose every time. So sometimes you're just not the right fit at the right time. Michael, not the right fit at the right time, but was the man capable of doing the job without a doubt. And he and I spent a good amount of time after the interview for me to explain that to him. So sometimes you're just not the right fit. I can tell you, I'll give you an example. I went to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. They flew me up for an interview. I had an interview. One or two interviews on the phone with them, flew up. There were two things that kept us apart. One was money, because I was in Coral Gables at the time, and I wasn't ready to move to North Carolina for less money. But the separation part, as I come to find out, was they were looking for someone with more of a Hispanic background, because at the time, Winston-Salem had an incredible influx of Hispanic population, and nobody in the city knew how to adequately deal with providing proper parks and recreation programming for a Hispanic population. Now that sounds crazy to us who are professionals, but that's what they were looking for. They were looking for someone with a Hispanic background. They were looking for, I got a call from the mayor, the city manager, the HR, and assistant city manager from Tampa one time when they were looking. Matter of fact, when they hired our good friend, Colorado, Karen Pallas. They told me, they called me on the phone, and the mayor called me and said, listen, we're interested if you'd be interested in coming, but what we're really looking for, and do you know anybody that has these qualifications? And they were looking for a woman to lead the charge, and then they were looking for someone with a little bit of a diverse background. At the time, it pissed me off, because I thought that's, pretty bold of them to say it, and second of all, not sure, how legal it was when we say it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So you kind of have to bank on someone else on the opposite. So you've got the manager people who are conducting interviews, right? You've got the interviewee. And they've got to kind of go the spectrum and go, how far are we willing to go to ask somebody and say, who do you think would be a good fit for this position? And if they're actually doing their part of the job, I think it's, I mean, but there are many out there that don't do that. They won't take that risk and say, who do you think would be a good fit? Let me ask Joe Abel. Let me ask Matt Suma, whoever. Who do you think would be a good job or a good fit for this position from your department?
And I get that. I get that a lot. I get that at one point when I was really more, a lot more active in the state, I would get a call. I'd get a call from Ellen, such and such, Panama City, Deerfield Beach, whoever it was, anywhere in the state. They're looking for a director, or they're looking for so and so. Who should I send them? Because I was pretty well connected. I can tell you the directors at most of the agencies across the state. Because that was part of my learning, that was part of my research, that was part of me knowing who I was, what I was doing, and about the profession. But you have to have confidence in building the right team. I mean, I've made a lot of bad decisions, don't get me wrong. I've made some of the worst hires that you could ever imagine. Because I thought something that wasn't true. Or I picked up on something in an interview that I thought I liked or that I thought I heard. It was a sound bite that turned out not to be true. And that's hard. And that's why I spend time on this, building the All-Star Bench, because it doesn't take long or much to hire the wrong person. And now your All-Star Bench becomes, a division loser. From a tournament perspective, you can hire the wrong people, and you got to make sure that you either get it fixed or get them off the team. Unfortunately, we're not like sports, so we can't just trade them all the time. So that would be nice if we could. So what else on pre and post preparation follow-up interviews?
What about getting your name out there? You're already in an agency. You're not getting in trouble. You're not seeing my name come across the desk all the time. In my eyes, it's great, but is that good for the good parts, obviously, for getting moving up?
Nope. If I don't know you, I don't know you. If you're in my organization, yeah. I don't know who you are. I don't know
you're
who you are.
You're doing great. You're on the committee.
Yeah.
This certified. Your name coming across somebody's desk.
If you're doing good things in the right places, you'll get noticed by the right people. Okay. Now, here's the other thing you've got to remember, and this may be on one of the slides coming up, I don't know. The job that you think is the right job for you may not be the right job for you. The job that you aspire to may not be the right job. And you have to be able to know the difference. It might be the next step in your progression because it's in your organization, and we all like to, in most cases, stay within our organization, but sometimes you step outside the organization and you get a different perspective, and you sometimes get the opportunity to come back with that different perspective, and it makes all the difference in the world. I've worked with people when I was in Charleston, West Virginia, and I was only there for 2.5 years, but I worked with people who were there in one situation, left, and came back in another situation, and it was literally like two different people. I've had staff employees in Seminole County that didn't do well at one park, and when it got moved to another, it was like a completely different person. So you have to know your situation, and you have to, listen, we're not always going to get yeses. It's like asking the girls out for a dance in high school. There's a chance you're going to get a yes or no. The idea is, are you willing to take a chance and have you done the homework to make sure you're asking the right girl? let's see what's the next slide here. Alright, how do you actively develop knowledge and experience? What do you do to gain knowledge and experience? This is an easy one, folks.
Go to conferences.
That's probably the easiest thing to do.
Make a mistake.
Pardon me?
Make a mistake.
Make a mistake? Well, that'll do it for you. Well, I take it back. Making mistakes, but learning from mistakes. Kind of like the whole failure thing. I don't use the term failure because I don't fail.
doing research and listening to how other people do things.
Absolutely, absolutely. Research, again, goes back to preparing for the job. Now, I said I don't fail, I kind of said it in passing. I fail 100 times, thousands probably in my lifetime. But I don't like to call them failures, I like to call them setbacks. I like to call them redirection. I like to call them adjusting the course. Because if you failed or if you've made a mistake and you learn from it, I'm sorry, that just doesn't seem like it fits in the failure category. It feels to me like it fits in a category of learning and experience. Most of the people who say they have lots of experience also have lots of failures or lots of setbacks. The worst question in an interview I love to ask, I hate to answer. So tell us about one of your biggest failures. No, just shut up, I'm not interested in that. Because I know what you want me to do. You want me to tell you about my failure and how I overcame it. Well, then if I overcame it, it wasn't really a failure. It was a learning experience. I moved on. So let's tell me about a time when things didn't go the way you really wanted them to, and what could you have done, or what did you do differently? Because as soon as you ask somebody to tell them about a failure, you don't know where they're going to go. I've seen some answers that I'm like, stop, please, don't tell me anymore. To the point now that when I ask a question similar to that, I preface it with, in your professional life. Because some of this shit, you will hear. And you'll look at it as like, I wouldn't tell my mom that story, but I didn't think you'd feel comfortable enough to tell me that story. Because it's not getting you the job. There's opening up and then there's opening up. That's just a little too much. I had an interview one time that we started looking around the table, a panel interview. We started looking around the table because every one of us was uncomfortable with where this story was going. It was that personal. So, anyway, I digress. How else do you actively develop knowledge and experience?
I think you have to seek it out at a higher level and a lower level. Because you know that, like you said earlier, people are coming from all different perspectives. They have all different types of knowledge. You know, they've been in different experiences. And you don't know everything. You can't be afraid to ask somebody with 20 years experience or somebody that's right off the street, new to their profession. You don't know.
Perfect. It's almost akin to you like to read books and you like an author and you read all their books, but you don't read anybody else's, especially if it's leadership or management or self-help or something. And you read all of that person's books, guess what you have at the end of the day? That person's perspective. But what's good is when you read enough different books from enough different people, and what I always say are the nuggets, is that when this guy says something that this guy has said, and this guy has said, and this guy has said, and this guy has said, they've all said it in different ways, and I steal it and make it mine, those are the ones that I like the most. Okay, that was funny, right? The ones I steal. But you do. You look for those things that make the most sense. You had something in back.
Actively, what I've got to do, what I thought was important is trying to be a part of not just your department. Reach out to different departments and when they have volunteer opportunities, go over to solid waste. Go to the mayor's, you learn how the city as a whole works, so that kind of makes you, you're not just solely in what you do in Parks and Rec, but kind of get a better grasp of all the departments that make everybody function and all that stuff.
Perfect.
Job shadowing.
That's perfect. Job shadowing is a perfect example. We used to, when I got to Seminole County, we had an employee academy. And part of the employee academy was each department would pick one or two people that they thought were up-and-comers and put them in this class, and they literally, we had over a 10-month period, they visited all the departments. And all the departments did a little dog and pony show to tell them what they do in that department so that they had an understanding and appreciation of what everybody else was doing across the county. Now, I got lucky when I went to Seminole County because they have, it's called Leadership Seminole. And that is where you take a lot of the top level people and you put them together and they do a 10-month thing around the county. So I was learning not only about government, but I was learning about the school system. I was learning about private businesses. I was learning about economic development. I was learning about the not-for-profit sector. But at the end of that 10 months, the first 12 months I was in Seminole County, I knew all the movers and shakers. I knew all the right people. I knew the right people to ask things for. I knew the right people to get engaged with, because they were the ones who were making things happen in Seminole County. So if you can get into those opportunities, absolutely go into them. Somebody else had something?
So, so be approachable and be receptive. But I have an example, and it's going to sound kind of off color, but being here, just for an example, this week, you guys see us in the lobby. You see us hanging out, having beers, whatever, drinking. It's a social environment, right? Collectively, we have over 1,000 years of experience in this industry. We're not just sitting there talking about our personal lives. We're actually interacting with each other and being receptive to what other people are telling us, but we're also sharing our knowledge. And it's, we see other people passing us by, but we're approachable. Like, just join. Walk up to one of those groups and say, hey, I'm so-and-so from here. Do you have any ideas on this? And of course, it's over 1,000 years of collective experience. Of course, we're going to have something to say about that. But also be part of that group where you're willing to share that information. It's a give and take, I think. And especially in this environment, it's easy. It's an easy hit. And it's an easy opportunity for you to get the opportunity to find out that information from more people.
I don't know, the 32 years I've been in the profession, I don't know of a single instance that I have ever gone up to someone who I thought should be a mentor or an influencer to me and asked them a question that they weren't willing to sit down and have a conversation with me. And maybe set up the time to do it later because they were on their way someplace. But I don't know in our profession anybody that has not offered to help somebody out if they ask. I don't. We are fortunate in this profession because of that. And going back to that, in the networking opportunities, and we're going to talk in one of my classes later, networking and relationship and the difference, so I won't spoil that for you. But networking opportunities at this conference are as important as the educational session that we set in. And I learned that when I was in the athletic business school or the revenue resource school at Ogilvy. I was sitting around the corner from, Weston was his last name. He was the director of Mecklenburg County Parks and Recreation. And he laughed because we were sitting there having a couple of beers, and he was one of the regents on the board of directors for the school. And he said, he goes, Joe, you'll learn as much right here this evening as you will the whole week if you pay attention. He said, not because of me, but because of the conversations I have with people who approach me. And I'm telling you, for the next 3 hours, I was buying this guy beer because he was worth the cost of the beer to sit and listen to him tell stories that were relevant to advancing in parks and recreation. And at the time, Mecklenburg County had just joined Mecklenburg and the city of Charlotte together, and he was endeavoring to do something that only a few times had happened across the United States, where you merge two agencies together like that within one county system. And he talked a lot about that week, but he talked a lot about that night. And the stuff that I learned that day, just that day, and the fact that I can remember some 20-some years later, tells you the influence and the impact that you have on people's lives if you just take the time to be willing to either mentor or do the right thing from a leadership perspective. Other thoughts on how do you develop knowledge and experience?
Through other people's mistakes?
Okay. Well, I'm telling you, absolutely. Other people's mistakes are much better than my mistakes. And it kind of goes along with, not just other people's mistakes, but stealing other people's ideas. I used to say, 32 years, I don't know that I've had an original idea in 32 years when it comes to programming or managing or the things I do. But I am damn good at stealing other people's good ideas. And I'm good at watching other people's mistakes or missteps or whatever and learning that, matter of fact, I was in, I'm not saying it was here in Florida. I spent 6 years in a department. And And I got so dissatisfied and so unhappy that I was applying for almost anything that I could find. And that was the job I told you earlier, but I almost got out of the profession. I was so unhappy for two reasons. One is I was bored because I'm an athletic supervisor. I had done all that I could do in this little town. To the point that I literally, from league to league, I could pull a file drawer open, pull out last year's, change the dates, update it, add one new thing, and run it, and it would pretty much run itself. That's how bored I was. And I kind of got pigeonholed into this because I was in athletics, and I thought, my God, if I don't get out of athletics, I'm never going to get management. And then there was the director who was content in being the director, and that was okay, but he wanted to dabble in my job, which was not okay, because he would sometimes take the political route to answer things as opposed to the right. I'll give you an example. And I've used this in an interview, and it cost me a job because I was honest. So we had a women's softball league. About halfway through the season, I thought that we had done all of the backgrounds, all the checks that we're supposed to do for the roster. All of a sudden, this person shows up, starts playing some games that was never on the roster. We get to the end of the season, we're getting ready to go, and somebody questions it, just out of the blue. Well, when they questioned it, I had to do something. And we had rules that said exactly how we handled it. And I followed those rules exactly how we handled it. And this is small council. I knew all these people on all the teams personally, because we would go out and have drinks after the games every week. And I had to make a decision that was not popular. I had to make them forfeit all their games and their win in a tournament. And because it became political, the director said, we shouldn't do that. And this is so silly that it got all the way up to the city manager. And the city manager sided with me because, well, that was the rules. And everybody agreed to the rules. And they broke the rules. And we got sideways and from that point on, I was always sideways with the director. And I thought, I gotta get out of here. But let me tell you, it was one of the best learning experiences I ever had, because when I went to my next position as an assistant director and my next position as a director, and even today as a director and as a deputy county manager, there's as much to learn from the bad things as there are from the good things. I remember when I left that place that there were a list of things that I said I would never do the way this guy did them. I would never treat people this way. I would never do this in this circumstance. And by that focus and mentality, it changed and adjusted and improved who I was as a forward commander from a bad situation. Knowledge and experience. How else? Oh, you tell me books. Read books. I'm a book, not a book geek. When I was on the NRPA board and we do a lot more traveling, I would try to find books, and it's funny, John Spence. Anybody know John Spence? John Spence has been around for a while. He's done a lot of stuff with NRPA. He's one of the top 50 thought leaders in the world. He and I were joking one day about books. He reads like 100 books a year. I try to get in a couple books, 2 or 3, 4 or 5 books a year. And I focus on leadership management or sometimes self-help, but self-help seems like, you know, I need to go to a psychologist or something. That's really not what they are. I don't think maybe I do. But it goes back to those books, different authors, different perspectives, different things about how you leadership or how you lead and how you manage people and situations. So when I was flying, I would try to find a book that I could read on the way there and on the way back. Didn't interrupt anything I was doing while I was there, but if it was a good hour and a half, 2 hour plane ride, I could knock a book out, and it was just, it felt rejuvenated. And when I come back, I do the same thing. Read books. Read easy books. Don't read hard books, Michael, Richard. We did, what was it, a year or two ago now? We started with our team, Book of Month Club. So the leadership team all got together. We decided on a book. We passed it around. We read it, and the next month we would come back, or 2 months later we would come back and we would talk about something as simple as, what are the two takeaways from that book that you can improve on or implement in your job moving forward? That was it. That was all the discussion we had. And we had some good books, and we had some not so good books. And then it started trickling down. So the division manager started doing it with some of their leadership teams, supervisory teams and stuff. And it started making a difference. You could start seeing it because people started talking about the same stuff in the same way. They start, you see from a leadership perspective, people were doing things a little differently than they were before. And there started being some consistency across the way we managed. Now, I'm taking this on as a challenge from as a deputy county manager, because in the next 6 months, one of the things I want to do is set up a leadership management program for the top leadership in Seminole County from all the departments, from the supervisor's level all the way up to the director's level. And we're going to do something very similar to that. Because I'm a firm believer that if we, as a leadership team, have the right people, and that we're thinking the same way and delivering consistently, that there's nothing that can stop us. Because we become a team, and we move together, we think together, and we influence together as a team. How nice would it be if your supervisors thought the same way as the director when it came to management? How cool would that be? How cool would it be that your city manager or your county manager thought the same way that your supervisor did? That the same things that were important at the entry level was as important at the upper management level. How cool would that be? It can be done. And if I live long enough, I'm going to prove it can be done in the next 3 to 4 years. So develop yourself through mentorship. Let's talk about mentoring and leadership. There's a new term now called servant leadership. And when it came out, before I read anything about it, I thought, what a crock of shit. How can you not be a leader and not be a servant leader? Well, then I started reading it, and I'm like, okay, there is a difference. I've seen leaders that people who could step out and move something forward and everything else be damned. They would create a path and a wake behind them, but man, they would get there, and they would get there fast, or they would get there, and ultimately it might be a success, but what they would leave in the wake were a lot of people who weren't on their team. And servant leadership is really about what I do for my people. And I, as much as I hate to use that phrase, it really is about what I do for them. So we have an agreement with my group that I'm not here to do your job. It's one of Joe's commandments. I'm not here to do your job, and if I have to do your job, I don't need both of us. And since I'm the director, guess which one of us is not going to be here? And it's happened a few times. But I also am very specific in what the expectations are. Who's responsible between the two of us on those expectations? And then allow each of us to hold each other accountable. That's a whole different session and a whole different story. But it all starts with mentoring and leadership. Because if your leader can also be your mentor, you've struck a chord there that you can't. That's one of the greatest things ever. But if you can find a good mentor, I've struggled with this term. So as much as I've struggled with leadership and servant leadership, I've struggled with mentor and influencer. I don't typically use the word mentor anymore or mentorship, because mentorship sounds like a internship where you're sitting down with someone for a defined period of time and you're trying to learn something or be better, and then you move on. I want to be an influencer. I want to be the guy that in 10 years from now, somebody in his class says, I remember sitting in one of Joe Rangel's classes, and made this comment that just stuck with me. And it affected how I led. It affected how I hired an all-star team. It affected how I went about my day as a professional. That's an influencer. And I'd much rather be an influencer than a mentor. And maybe just in my mind it's different. I don't know. Because I'm a little weird. Anything else on that one? I have 10 minutes. I'm running out of spots. All right, so here's really why some of you are here, probably more than anything else. And you're not going to like the answer. Pretty popular. I have about three things to say about these two slides. How do you move up from inside your agency or organization? I truly believe, and I say this pretty much every chance I get, to get to the next level, to get to your next position, and you'll hear this again in probably another session or two, in order to be a successful candidate at the next level, Michael, what do you have to do, according to Joe Abel?
Be excellent. Be excellent what you do.
Be excellent at the position you're in. Be excellent at the position you're in. The one thing that I do not like as a director or as a leader is when I have a staff person who is trying so hard to impress me by doing the things in the job they want that they fail miserably in the job they have. So now there's a leak in this position, and I've got two people trying to be in this position. It's the worst scenario you can have. So I always tell people, your best route for advancement is to own who you are, to own the position that you're in, to know as much, to be as good, and do as well as anybody that you know that's in a position equal to yours. When I was in athletics, I'm telling you right now, I knew most all, I certainly knew all the influential athletic people in the state of Florida. And my goal was to become one of them, and then my other goal was to be respected by that group. And that was where I was. I was going to be excellent in the position I had, and at the time it was athletics. And I wanted to be known in the world of athletics in the state of Florida as a go-to guy. If you wanted to know something about an athletic program, call Joe Abel. I may not have the answers, but I could get the answers. If I wasn't doing it, I knew who was. Because I wanted to be an influencer, didn't even know what that was at the time. I knew that I wanted to be the best at the job I had. When I got to an assistant director position, I had no clue what the hell was going on, but I knew that I wanted to be the best assistant director in Miami Shores that they ever had, and I wanted to be among the best leaders in the state of Florida. And that helped get me the position in Coral Gables, because just so happened that when I was in Miami Shores, there was a bond referendum in Miami-Dade. Now, I'm in one of the smallest cities, in fact, they call it the village of Miami Shores. I had less influence probably in what was going on with that than anybody from a stakeholder. Yet I embedded myself in the middle of it because we were having conversations as professionals and nobody was stepping up and taking the lead. And I said, well, by golly, I'll do it because I want it done right. So I stepped up to the leadership role. We got the right people at the table. Everybody was doing the right thing. Next thing I know, the city of Coral Gables job comes open. I applied for it, and they lost my application. So I sent it again. I called, they lost my application. I'm thinking, what the hell's wrong with these people? This is the only job I want to work for. I'm sitting at a steering committee meeting for the bond referendum one day, and one of the guys happens to be really good friends with none other than the city manager of Coral Gables. And he is so impressed with the way I've helped pull this group together that when he found out that I had applied for the director position in Coral Gables, he goes, oh my God, we gotta get you Coral Gables. You're a mover and shaker, you're a guy that gets things done. The next thing I know, I'm now getting a phone call from the same guy who lost my resume and application twice to come in for an interview. Now, some of you can say that was based on who you know. I like to think of it was based on who I knew and what I had done. And it opened the door of opportunity. It was moving up, and again, it was moving outside the organization to get to that level. So the simple answer here is how do you move up in your organization? Be excellent at the position you have. Be excellent at the position you have. Learn, be knowledgeable, know, do your research when you get ready to move that next level, but know without a doubt what's what happens when you fail to move up from inside? Try again. Try again. I had a guy, Fred Crucero. Everybody knows Fred. If you don't know Fred, you've never been around long enough. Fred was an athletics guy for me at Coral Gables. When I had a new position opportunity to hire an assistant director, he applied for it. I had tennis courts, a swimming pool, golf courses, and a youth center and neighborhood parks. Fred knew athletics, but he didn't know a lot about the rest of it. He came in, he was sweating bullets in the interview. He walked out of the interview. He was second best, third best candidate, whatever he was. He wasn't the right candidate. And he came in and sat down with me. Step number one was come find out what I can do better to get this position next time it's opportunity. I sat down and had a very honest conversation. I said, Fred, until you can find a way to get opportunities in these other areas to learn about it. Again, I don't need you to be proficient. I don't need you to be excellent. But I need you to know and understand and be able to manage it. 10 months later, we have an opening, same position. 12 months, he's sitting in the interview. I've got the assistant city manager. He was in the first one. He was in the second one. When Fred walked out, the assistant city manager looked at me and goes, what did you do to that guy in the last 12 months to prepare him for this interview? And I said, I did nothing except tell him what he needed to know to get to the next level. And he had come to FRPA. He'd gone to all the region or the time sectional opportunities that he had. He read books. He got invested and engaged in the profession to know how to become an assistant director, and he got the job. The rest is history for Fred. He's still the director down there. But this is a guy who didn't know what he didn't know, learned what he needed to know, and got the opportunity. Sometimes when you fail inside, this is the part that you might not like, and then I'll take some questions. But I think I might be close to the end. Sometimes you're just not going to get that next level. Not in the organization that you're in. And it's not about you. Sometimes it's about you. It's because you're just not ready. But sometimes it's about the organization. It's about the fit. It goes back to what Courtney said a while ago. It's about the fit for the team. It's about being the right person at the right time in the right place. And I know that sounds terrible and it sounds hurtful, but I'm telling you, I've interviewed a lot of good people. I've been in interviews where I've interviewed five people and any of the five could have done the job without a doubt, probably blindfolded. My decision has to be based on which of those five that I know can do the job is the best fit within the organization as it sits today. And sometimes you're not going to be that person. And it's incumbent on you to be able to figure that out and go find the right opportunity, because you find the right opportunity, sometimes you can come back to that same organization and be ready for that next level. And guys like me will appreciate that, because we see what's happened, and if you've learned and you've progressed, we're going to notice that. We're going to see a different you when you come back, and it's going to help you. Now, I'm not saying go out and leave tomorrow, but I'm saying weigh your options. I've been with five different organizations in my career. This will be my last one. I'll make a conscious effort to be a deputy county manager. I'm going to create an all-star team from the county's management team. We have the right players, I believe, on our team right now. It's getting those players the tools they need and the opportunities to be successful beyond where they are now. And that's part of how do you move up. And how do you build an all-star team? You have to have the right people in the right place, and they have to work together as a team. I'm a coach. I'll always be a coach. I am now the coach of a team. I was a coach of the Leisure Services team. I was not the point guard, and I didn't want the staff to expect me to be the point guard. I had a point guard, and I wanted that point guard to be the best damn point guard that we had on the team. Every position had its responsibility, clear expectations, clear responsibilities, clear accountability, and that's how you build an all-star team. Questions?
Do you look at generations like millennials to baby boomers? Does that change the filter on any of this kind of stuff?
Oh, that's a very good question. And I do, but I don't. I weigh it in, but I don't let it make my final decision, because I do still believe that as much, and I do a whole two-hour session on generational things, and it's not too bad. So there's a big difference between millennials, Generation X, baby boomers. I'm at the end of the baby boomers, and whatever the next one is, I can't think of right now. So I'm kind of mixed in between them. But I'm a firm believer that if you're willing, your generation does not define who you are in the workforce. I'm a firm believer that I'm not looking for millennials. I'm not looking for baby boomers. I'm looking for the right person for the right position at the time that I'm hired. I will almost go as far as saying that I'm less about the millennial, the generational thing, as I am about getting the right person, and then in some cases molding the job around that person. Once I've chosen the right person, then I start molding that position around that person. And they may take on things that the previous person didn't. They may take on different things than the next person would. But that's all about coaching and being effective and making sure that you've got all the right people. Other questions? Hey, listen.